For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back with another hour of Non-League's finest and proudest. And talking of which, I'm joined this week by our very own Non-League European expert via the power of Skype. Welcome back to the show, a Non-League journo and FC United guru, Swampy.
Good evening, Tim. Good evening.
Was that a nice introduction? I always worry. You know, where do I go with it? I could have referred to you as some pantomime character, but I didn't really want to go down that road.
No, don't worry about that. I think it's January. It's pantomime more than anything, isn't it? So we'll wait until then. But it must be very difficult week in, week out, all the times I'm actually on the show, having to come up with superlatives because I'm just a mere human being, and it must be very, very difficult for you to be able to make me sound like I'm actually better than I actually am.
Well, it can be an easy task some weeks, sir. So it's good to have you back, and you've been enjoying that there Belgian football as well as the beer.
Indeed, yeah, the Belgian beer is very, very nice indeed. But the football, when you combine it with beer and football, can get even better. Yeah, I mean, you know, my love of semi-professional football is known to all, and trying to find a local team, very local to me here where I live in Brussels, just was a little bit problematic. And I got introduced to Union Saint-Gilles and a club that have a huge history, but at the same token have been a semi-professional club on and off for the last 20, 30, 40 years. They won the Belgian division from 1905 to 1931, a record 11 times. So they're actually up there with the two other teams, I think Anderlecht and Club Brugge, of the all-time greats. But they've hit hard times. They've been here, even the third division here in Brussels and Belgium is an amateur league. And then you've got step four and step five, and lots of amateur leagues. They're absolutely amazed when I tell people that, you know, we have four professional leagues in the UK. And on top of that, most of the National League is professional, and some teams in the National League North and National League South are professional as well. They really can't believe that you've actually got the professionalism all the way down in our game. But yeah, I've been watching the back of the first division, and you know, €10 into watch a game of football, a beer in the hand. They played Genk, who were top of the Belgium top division, who were also top and won their group in the Europa League, and it was a quarterfinal of the Belgian Cup. The crowd, the largest in living memory, just over 7,000 in attendance last night. A sellout crowd. Genk brought over 1,000, and well, it was a great game of football, really entertaining, and we were victors with a fantastic death penalty in a penalty shootout. Keeper went one way, the ball was just agonisingly floating in. And away we went. I'm very happy. Saying that, the game didn't finish till 11:30 because the kickoff is 9:15. And with the extra time and penalties, it was a mad dash to my local hostelry. And luckily, they're open till about 1:30. So there was much merriment, fun. But it's great standing on the terraces, enjoying, you know, football. And standard-wise, people keep asking me, you know, what standard do you really think you're at? You know, even in the first division Belgium, because obviously they've produced, as you noted, phenomenal amounts of football players. Mm. I think some of the national teams, league teams, national league could compete in the Belgium first division. The standard is decent. It's like watching semi-professional football. It has the passion and the heart, but they are full-time, and they've got a good chance of being promoted into the top league next season. But yeah, Belgian football is on the up. It's entertaining to watch. Primarily, everyone that plays in the first division are Belgium. And to beat Genk last night was fantastic. So long may it continue. But I'm back with FC shortly, so I'm looking forward to getting back to my northern roots over the Christmas period.
Well, I was going to mention that does Christmas take in FC United?
Yeah. Well, I'm actually going to be. We played this weekend. We've got Leamington Spa down to Leamington Spa, play Leamington FC away. Then we've got a home tie on the 26th against Chorley. Then we've got a home tie on the 29th against Spennymoor, and then we're away on New Year's Day back to Chorley. I'll miss all of those games, unfortunately, but I'm back for the Chester game on the 5th, and I'll also be doing the Bradford Park Avenue game on the following Saturday. So lots of games coming thick and fast. And it's very different here in Belgium because the last game of the sort of like before the winter break is this Sunday, and then we stop for till the 13th of January. So very, very different. I'll be looking for maybe some park football going on, I think, to give me my fix.
You need to be organising a ground hop back over to the UK with all your Belgian counterparts.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe for next season. I think for the first year here in Belgium, I've decided to just stay for the Christmas period. But I think now they have that break, there is an opportunity to do that ground hop back to the UK. Eurostar might even come and watch the mighty Hazen Yedding.
You know you'd always be welcome. It was interesting you mentioned about the standard of Belgian football, because I got into a debate this week with somebody about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer taking over, obviously, at Manchester United, coming from the Norwegian league. Now, I've watched Norwegian football in Norway, and I'd probably say step three is how it impressed me. I think there's certainly plenty of players that are playing step three, step four even, that will be able to compete in the Norwegian top level there. So it'll be interesting to see how actually he says he's learnt more to come across to the Premier League. It'll be interesting to see how much he's learnt in the Norwegian league.
I think you're right. I think the one thing I've noticed is the difference between the skill level is there, the quality of play is there, it's the intensity and the pace of the game is a lot slower in European football, certainly the Belgium division. And that sometimes players switch off a little bit, because for me the game's a little bit too slow. But certainly last night's game, because they were playing against a top team, it was a quarter final, the pace of the game was still not sort of like the kind of pace that we were used to. But some might say that's a good thing, because players are more technical, they're better quality on the ball, and you're watching a better overall game. But I think we enjoy the cut and thrust. And with Solskjaer, I think it's going to be... It's a very strange appointment, I have to say. But equally, he has to learn a heck of a lot, because, as you say, the lower the nations that have teams that, you know, ordinarily aren't at the same level, let's say, of the Italian divisions and the Spanish divisions and the German divisions. He's going to have a tough time on his hands, but it's great to see him back in football, and certainly at United for the time being. But I think it's a very short-term thing. And as you say, step three, step four players he's been used to working with, now he's working with the big boys, and we'll have to see how it goes.
We will. Well, as much as we love all football, let's get talking about some non-league football back here in the UK. Well, let's start this week off with a return to the FA Cup. Two massive FA Cup replays this week gone, involving non-league sides. So who better to explain what went on than our FA Cup expert, Mr. Phil Annett at FA Cup Fact File. Welcome back, Phil.
Hi, Tim. Hi, how are you doing?
Well, I'm still struggling, as you can hear, Phil. But so Monday night, Southport hosted Tranmere Rovers for that third round prize of a home tie against Tottenham Hotspur, but it wasn't to be.
No, it was a real shame for Southport. And all the history of stats said that Southport would win, having drawn twice before against Tranmere, 1-0 in the FA Cup and beaten them in the replay. But this year, Tranmere turned it on in the first half. The game at Tranmere, we saw a wonder goal from Southport, but on Monday night we saw an outstanding, fantastic goal for was it Connor Jennings, is that his name, from Tranmere? Superb volley, and I think the second goal, another equally high quality goal just before half time, did the job, and I don't think Southport could recover from them.
And then on Tuesday, Solihull Moors travelled to Blackpool with a carrot of a home tie against Arsenal. They went close, but luck not with them either.
Well, I think they were definitely the better team in the overall game. In the first half, Blackpool had two attacks and scored on both occasions. A lesser team might have wilted, but Solihull Moors came back, got that goal just before half time. Then they got, well, some say a fortuitous penalty, but to equalise. And I was next to the Solihull Moors Twitter team, and they went bananas, as you can imagine, at that point. And if any team was going to win it, it looked like it was going to be Solihull. But again, another dubious penalty decision in extra time gave the tie to Blackpool in the end. But Solihull can be proud of their achievements, equaling their best ever FA Cup run.
Yeah, I mean, lots of stats broken. Out of interest, are there any stats on non-league teams against football league sides in the replay? It does tend to be that maybe the replay's a step too far.
I don't have to hand off the top of my head who wins on top. You'd probably imagine that the league team only get caught short once. They'll get out of jail, I guess, in the first game, and then they'll normally up their game. But there are definitely instances in the past when the non-league side has still done it.
Yeah, I mean, one great thing was the TV profile that games were given in the second round this year for non-league sides. And that's got to help the profile for non-league football all around.
Yeah, I think they've done really well this year. The non-league sides have had great exposure. They've even had, you know, the only downside was they had to move the games to so late after the first time, the first rounds were played. But they've done really well. And we've still got a couple more in the third round, and they're both, Woking definitely is chosen to be live on TV in the UK. So at least one of the two will be getting more TV exposure.
Yeah, a better season for non-league in the FA Cup this year than last, for sure. But maybe not as good as we'd hoped. And still, as you mentioned, Woking in particular, it's still potential for non-league third round glory.
Oh, very much so. I know Watford will be a tough team to beat. It depends who they select and the mindset they have themselves. Woking will definitely be up for it. They've only made the fourth round once, and we know about that famously beating West Bromwich Albion to make the fourth round. So, you know, it'd be good if they can repeat that feat. And I'll give them a chance, but it all depends on how serious Watford take it.
Yeah, and that third round all to come in the new year. So we'll talk to you again nearer the time there. But it is, of course, Christmas time. And that means immediately in everybody's mind, forget the mince pies, forget the Christmas pud, forget the Christmas parties. It's the factors. And that's what you oversee. Yeah? Remind people, Phil, what are the factors and how can people get involved?
The factors, well, they're the FA Cup Team Awards. They're designed to recognise non-league clubs' achievements in the FA Cup. We have 644 non-league clubs enter the FA Cup, and by the end of January, most have been forgotten by those that are still following the competition. So I like to highlight their achievements throughout this season. And this is the fourth year that the factors have been running. And if people want to get involved, well, the nominations are out now. So I'm seeking nominations for the four major awards. I will be doing so right up until Christmas Eve. So if you've got a view on your non-league team's performance in the FA Cup and you think they deserve one of the four awards, which I'll just remind you what they are, there's the team of the FA Cup, so who you think has performed the best in the non-league world in the competition this year. Then there's an award for a particular performance, so a one-off match. Have you experienced a fantastic comeback or a terrific win over high league opposition? Then there's the award called the Surprise of the FA Cup, and that could just be, you know, a team overperforming versus expectations, or just in a one-off match if they achieve something distinct. And then the special team award is the final one, and this one is trying to highlight those non-league clubs that show the spirit of the FA Cup, you know, and to show how they really take on board the desire to do well in the competition and embrace the competition for what it all stands for.
All fantastic stuff, Phil. And you're saying nominations are open until Christmas Eve. And then what happens after that?
Okay, so once people got in touch, either via Twitter or on Facebook or emailing me at phil@facupfile.co.uk, post-Christmas, there'll be opportunity to vote for those nominated clubs. So I usually try and find four clubs per nomination, and it depends on per category. Depends on how many have been nominated, of course. And then the voting will be open from about the 28th of December to the 3rd of January, and hopefully we'll be announcing the winners just before the third round of the FA Cup.
So you're going to clearly be busy over Christmas, but what about football for you, Phil, over Christmas?
No, football takes a back seat for me in terms of physically going to watch any games. Lots of family activities going on, take a little bit of a break. So hopefully I'll get to an FA Cup game after New Year's Day. I haven't got anything sorted as yet, but hopefully I'll get to one.
And just remind people where they can find out about the factors and how they can vote again.
Okay, yes. Yeah, so obviously on Twitter, at FA Cup Fact File. You can follow me there, or you can go on to my Facebook page, which is under FA Cup Fact File as well. But they're the two best ways to just put your nominations forward. I've got a pinned tweet on both of those, or pinned post on both of those. So just reply to those pinned posts, and hopefully your non-league team will get a chance to be awarded a factor at the end of the season.
Yeah, and great to be celebrating the input that non-league football has into the FA Cup. Because, as you say, once we get past that third round, then some of that magic disappears. Certainly the magic that the non-league teams have scattered on the competition gets easily forgotten.
Yeah, I think the magic, and the other word I'd use is the passion. I think the passion for the competition is that it's most intense in the qualifying rounds. And it's great that, you know, the magic is if a non-league team can defeat a league side, as Woking did earlier in the season. And it'd be great to see them do it again. For me, it's where the passion is for the competition is the non-league world.
And nobody is as passionate about the FA Cup as yourself, Phil. Thanks for joining us once again. And, we look forward to hearing more about the factors in a future show.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Tim. And have a fantastic Christmas. And I'll see you, I'll speak to you hopefully soon.
Now, you'll probably recall that last weekend was FA Trophy weekend, the last 64, round one, and exciting for all involved. Well, exciting for those who took part, at least. On Saturday, the weather battered the country and a number of games fell foul of the conditions and were postponed. One of those was a tie between Weymouth and Needham Market, a late postponement which has left a sour taste in the mouth of the East Anglian side, which, due to travel and predicted midweek weather, they were forced to pull out of the competition altogether. To tell us more, assistant manager at Needham Market, Nathan Munson, returns to the show. Welcome back, Nathan.
Hello, Tim. Hi.
Hi. Now, we spoke to you earlier on in the season. You were hopeful of a decent cup run, the trophy perhaps offering that chance. Can you explain how the weekend unfolded?
Yeah, I can. Firstly, to look at the cup runs overall, it's probably fair to say that we did. We were probably a round short of where we wanted to be in the FA Cup. But the FA Trophy run up to the point when it ended had been the club's best ever. So we probably overachieved there. So balancing the two out, I think we were still quite pleased. But so Saturday's incident was, it's a ludicrous decision, really. We travelled down to Weymouth on Friday, most of the players having to take a day off work to give ourselves every opportunity of being competitive in the match. From the moment we got down to Weymouth, it was pouring down with rain. We arrived at the ground. Richard Wilkins, the manager, and I walked out to the pitch about 1 o'clock and looked at each other and said, well, there's no chance this is going to be played. It was, despite the best efforts of the Weymouth staff who were out on the pitch forking and doing everything you could be expected, the weather was too much. So it was called off, quite rightly. We were back on the bus for the 7-hour trip home. And we had a bit of discussion on the bus about opportunities and possibilities of getting some time off for the following Saturday, because actually we thought that was the only logical decision to be made, that Tuesday would just not feature at all. Only to be told that it had to be played Tuesday, otherwise we'd be kicked out of the tournament. It's just unfair to even ask the players to take two days off work, which would effectively been a Tuesday and a Wednesday, because it's a 7-hour journey both ways for us. To ask the players to take that sort of time off just before Christmas is completely unreasonable. We've got, you know, builders and, you know, last minute deadlines before Christmas to hit, and teachers and everything else. It's just not practical. So So we were forced to withdraw, Tim. It's as simple as that. Not something that we wanted to do. And I think one of the important things here is that we just didn't foresee that going down to Weymouth on a Tuesday was even a possibility, because, of course, if there would have been a replay, we would have been at home. Had we have been scheduled to play the Saturday match at our place and there was a replay, would have seen the possibility of that, so would have been able to approach people at work earlier. But to go down to Weymouth twice in 3 days was just not a realistic, not foreseen as a realistic prospect. So that's really the problem. And yeah, it has left a sour taste. We, of course, want matches to be finished on the pitch, and it's robbed the opportunity of players to play in a big match and have the opportunity to go further. So that's what frustrates me the most. It's cost the players that opportunity of a memorable day.
Yeah, and how hard is it as a management team to explain that to the players, let alone the fans? Because they've already followed you to this round, made the commitment. You know, most of them probably travel down on Saturday as well, so they're already out of pocket. And then, you know, it's difficult for you as a manager, but then you've got to explain it to everybody else as well.
Yeah, I think we're very fortunate. We're a very close-knit group of players, very close-knit club, in fact. We had a good number of supporters on the coach that come down and pay their own money to stay over with us on Friday. So it is difficult to explain, but I think everybody understands the situation that we're in. They see the logic in it and fully support the decision that the club has made. The illogical part of it is that the FA seem to have arrived at the decision that they've arrived at without any consideration for anything else. I mean, the next round of the competition, I believe, is the 12th of January. And so there was plenty of time. I do notice as well that Havant and Waterlooville's game on a Tuesday was called off. You know, this is another one of the features that, in all probability, we could have gone down there on Tuesday and it would have been called off again. I mean, can you just imagine? It was forecast for another 3 days of rain. So, and that particular match, the replay is on the 8th of January. So it just, on any level, it makes absolutely no sense. And we're the ones that have suffered. So that's the frustration. But the club, we're all together on this. And we're able to put it behind us with a good result on Tuesday night.
Yeah, Nathan, I mean, it's a dreadful situation. Players, as you say, that are, you know, semi-professional, that have jobs at this time of the year especially, you know, trying to get time off work is nigh impossible. You've done the best preparation you can, you know, in one of the biggest games for your club to try and get through to the next round. Prepared in the right manner by travelling on the Friday and then the game being called off on the Saturday. I mean, how does it make you feel when you look at sort of like the higher echelons of football where teams are actually given additional days rest in order to actually be able to prepare for, let's say, Champions League football or for FA Cup football? They must really stick in the craw there, really.
Yeah, that's fair. It wasn't lost on us. Some of the inconsistencies at the different levels of football that we'd made the travel. Some of the players got back at 10 o'clock at night on Saturday and had to go to work on the Sunday. And in any case, we did have a match on Tuesday, and it was quite a draining couple of days, really, because, of course, you can imagine our players' WhatsApp group was non-stop with, are we playing, is it, you know, are we in, are we out? And then sadly we found out that we were out. So it was quite a draining experience. And so that's why I was really pleased that when we faced Redditch on Tuesday night, we were able to get over the line and get the 3 points in that one against a decent Redditch side in really tough conditions, because it would have just probably topped it off if we'd have come back and put in a dismal performance and lost a bit of ground in the league as well. So it is very frustrating. You can probably tell that I'm enormously frustrated about it because there just doesn't seem to be any reasonableness to the FA's decision. I mean, will they come out and explain? Well, probably not. We'd be too small a club to get anything like that. But without it, it's difficult to understand their thinking.
Yeah, I mean, from an FA perspective, it would be interesting, obviously, to get their perspective. I have read a couple of statements, what's been said, and the rules of the game, and obviously replays ordinarily are Tuesdays. Well, this is it wasn't a replay; it was down to a waterlogged pitch, and therefore, yeah, you know, very, 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 very simple to play the following Saturday, you know, which is the right thing to do. But the FA, I suppose, really, you know, we need to look at this because these are players that this is maybe their last opportunity, maybe not in some cases, but, you know, an opportunity and a club missed that could have gone to the next round and only a few games away from the possibility of Wembley. And, you know, the FA pride themselves on grassroots football and semi-professional football and a footballing family. Well, it doesn't seem very footballing family to me, this. It just seems that the rules are the rules and we're not changing it for you guys. And then it's just tough, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I think you raised the key point there. It wasn't a replay. That's the key thing for me. If we'd have played at home on the Saturday and had got a draw against Weymouth, which meant we had to go down to Weymouth on a Tuesday night and had said that we couldn't fulfil that fixture, then that would be a completely different scenario. And nobody would have any sympathy with us because you foresee that and you plan accordingly. But if you're going to an away match on the Saturday, you just wouldn't ask your players to get the Tuesday and Wednesday off just in case the match is called off, because that so rarely happens. Weymouth, in fact, told us that they've lost about four or five games in the last 20 years to Waterlogged pitches, their pitch train as well. So that was the key fact for me, and that's the difference where the rules probably don't really cover the unusualness of the scenario. I was going to say that you know, in terms of travelling and preparation and professionalism, so in this year, we've had 8 cup matches and we've been drawn away every single time. So, you know, we're used to doing our travelling. We've done it and we haven't moaned about it at all. That's just the way it goes. But the circumstances for this particular match were extraordinary and it hasn't been considered, in my view.
No. You travelled down on the Friday, So you booked into a hotel on the Friday. I mean, was there talk of possibly saying, look, you know, the pitch might have drained by Sunday, stay another night and then play the game on the Sunday? Was that a consideration? Was that something that was a possibility, or was the pitch totally beyond, you know, the fact that it wasn't going to be played on the entire weekend?
So it was mentioned, but I don't think really as a likely outcome. And the main reason for that was the pitch was completely waterlogged. It was pouring down with rain the whole time we were there. And you look at the forecast and it was just forecast for rain for another 24 hours. And so it just didn't seem a sensible decision to make, to be honest, because we could, you know, at what point do you then call it? So, no, we all thought that the sensible decision would be to let this bit rain pass through and we'll go down the following Saturday. And, I mean, there's one thing that I would like to add on that as well, is that, I mean, we were quite disappointed that the FA didn't award us an overnighter in the first place. We actually funded the hotel entirely out of our own pocket. It's was about, I don't know, 5 miles short of whatever the FA decision is. And they said it takes 4 hours to get... It takes 4 hours to get there. Well, I tell you, Lewis Hamilton couldn't do it in 4 hours. It took us 7 hours both ways. So, you know, that was another computer-derived decision, I think. So, yeah, quite frustrating on that. But, yeah, we paid for that. You know, I know that Weymouth probably think they contributed. They didn't. It was all our own funds.
Well, just and finally from me, if let's say for whatever reason you had managed to get there on Tuesday, how many players would you have had from the first team actually been able to make it to that game?
Yeah, we just couldn't raise a side. People have said we should have sent the youth team down. Well, we couldn't. They were all we'd have had to have left at 11 o'clock in the morning. So they're involved in their education, and really that's not a satisfactory position anyway to take. You know, a youth side down to a powerful team like Weymouth, you know, what would the point be of that? But in terms of first team squad, we wouldn't have been able to raise 11 players.
Well, I mean, we had an example. FC United got into the quarter final of the FA Trophy 2012-13, I think it was. The players left on the Friday, those that could. Other people, including myself, we actually flew down with 3 or 4 of the players on the Saturday morning because, obviously, work commitment, school teachers. There's no way a school teacher can just say to his headmaster, you know, or headmistress that I need the day off, you know, on Tuesday. I've got to go to a football game because, you know, people have proper serious jobs, don't they? It's not a question of, like, you know, where they're all semi-professional lying on the backsides at home playing PlayStations. They're actually working class people yeah. doing a working class job and then playing football.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and also the majority of the team had to take the Friday off to travel down when we did. So they're taking the Friday off and then to take off the following Tuesday and Wednesday. We've got two players that have just started new jobs. The Friday was difficult for them. To then take the Tuesday and Wednesday would have been really challenging. We've got a couple of builders that had deadlines to hit. They might have got the sack, and we just couldn't be held responsible. We didn't even want to put them in the position to risk them being sacked for it. You know, Richard Wilkins is a teacher. I'm a police officer. It would have been really, really tough. The week before Christmas is really tough to do that.
Yeah, maybe lessons should be learned, because we as you say, there's a gap between that next round. But with the trophy behind you now, and thinking about that, you said you got back to the league and got a decent result on Tuesday. Yeah, the league's the focus now, and how's that going? You're sitting just outside the playoffs there in the new Southern Premier Central.
Yeah, new league, new for us. Moved across from Bostic. Following a difficult season last season. I know we spoke at the start of this season, Tim, didn't
yeah.
we? And just following our opening two fixtures, we won 4-0 and 8-1, and that was absolutely fantastic. And then, hopefully, it's not a curse of the show, but we went on a run of 1-9 for the next period. We had suffered a couple of injuries, which always affects teams with relatively small squads at our level of football. And we just had 1-9, and we dropped down to below mid-table, and now we've got the players fit. We've added a couple. James Baker's come in. He's an experienced player, and he's been absolutely excellent for us. And we've now had just two defeats in the last 14 matches, which has propelled us back up to, I think we're sixth at the moment, just outside the playoffs. Mm. So that's absolutely fabulous. Really, really pleased with that. I think genuinely at the start of the season, the ambition would have been to finish in the top half. And if we could move that into the top eight, then that would in fact be the highest finish the club has ever got in its history in the football pyramid. So that clearly would be the aim, to try and get into the top eight and break that record as well. And we have another important home match on Saturday against an improving Bedworth.
Mm. And the irony being, you're in that new division that's been created to help with the travel for clubs. And so how are you finding the travel in the new division?
Yeah, it's well, being where we are out in Needham in Suffolk, we found ourselves probably on the extremity of either league. In the Bostic, we had a number of trips down to the south coast at Bogners and Worthing and such like, Margate. And in this league, we find that we have a few up to the Midlands. So actually, I'd say that the travelling isn't hugely different. We've probably had to recruit players from a slightly different area. Previously, we would look and focus recruitment from London, in addition to the more locally based players. And we've now looked a little bit more towards the Cambridge area. So that's been a change. But I'd say overall that the travelling hasn't been too much of a difference or too much of an issue, really.
Well, it's fantastic talking to you again, Nathan. Hopefully, there's no curse with the show, and you'll go on a lovely Christmas run now, you'll be singing our praises from the highest levels come January. But we wish you well over the Christmas period, and hopefully speak to you again before the end of the season.
Thanks very much, Tim. Thanks for inviting me on the show tonight, and have a good Christmas, and hopefully we'll speak in the new year. Thank you.
Swampy, it's always a difficult one. You say that FA statement for fairness to all clubs in the competition and to prevent disruption to other competitions, we must ensure rearranged matches are scheduled within the rules of the competition. Now, that rule of the competition is the Thursday of that week, but maybe they need to look at this, because a midweek game, when you have got you have certain clubs not even playing on this Saturday because they've rearranged some other games over the Christmas period, there needs to be a bit more leniency, because certainly for clubs that are making that long journey, my own club, Hazen Yedding, made a trip to Weymouth last year, maybe the year before, and it was called off because of fog. And that was a long enough journey to, and sort of frustrating. But Needham Market probably got twice, maybe two and a half times that journey. And, you know, as we've said, for part-time players, it's just a bit too far.
It certainly is. There has to be sensible about these things. I mean, you know, obviously the FA have rules and regulations, and a lot of them are very good and they're needed, and they're for reasons that we know within the laws of the game are required. But something like this, which is, you know, going to cost the team a financially, because if they'd won and gone through to the next round, that's more cash available to them. Secondly, players possibly have their heads going down, and the fact that you know that they can't recoup themselves and they can't get back into the swing of things, which on this occasion doesn't seem to have happened, because they've done very well winning on Tuesday, which shows really good mindset from the management and the players that they've got a good togetherness. But yeah, I mean, common sense should prevail. It's very, very simple. If Manchester United can be allowed not to take part, was it the FA Cup, and go to Rio a number of years ago. To basically help with what seems to be the FA wanting to get the World Cup and not be in the most prestigious cup competition in the world, then surely Needham Market can play their game on Saturday against Weymouth in the FA Trophy at the level that we're at. And sometimes I think decisions are... rules are there, and sometimes rules are there to be broken. Rules are there to be tweaked. Rules are changed. You know, you can't continue to just stick by the letter of the law continuously. When circumstances are needed, you know, then we have to take steps and measures to make it sure that it's beneficial to the two teams taking part in the next round. As you say, there's many teams not playing this Saturday. There's teams that are playing... I'm missing out in games because they've all been rearranged. So it's just for me, it's a shame, because football hasn't won out of this. It's just basically Weymouth have gone through to the next round. They'll feel lucky that they've done so, and they've not had to kick a ball. And you should always have to kick a football in order to actually get through to the next round of any competition.
Now, they often say Christmas is a turning point in a club season, but one club who probably don't need any turning because they're top of their division is Morpeth Town. We spoke with Chairman Ken Petey last season as he had reservations about promotion being imposed on clubs like his own when winning their championships at Step 5. But what does he think now? Let's ask him. Welcome back to the show, Ken.
Good evening. Hello there.
So the Northern Premier Division 1 East, top of the table, 18 games played, 6 points ahead. Not as troublesome as you feared?
No, it's we've done really well. You know, you said to us before the season started that we'd be 6 points clear at Christmas, so we would certainly take it. I think the travelling, you know, we were expecting it to be fairly daunting, but it's turned out not to be so bad. You know, we're using our head and maybe go by train sometimes, and obviously, have a nice coach and have some fun on the way down, and card games, etc. So it's not as bad as we thought. It is expensive. It's running at about an extra $25,000 a year for us, for coaches. So we just have to work harder as a committee and make money for the club, really, to pay for it.
Now, you mentioned that big issue of travel. We've just heard from Needham Market, and they had to pull out of their FA Trophy rearranged game, got postponed because of the weather on Saturday, and they couldn't play it midweek because the lads simply couldn't make the travel and get the time off work. Have midweek games been your biggest problem this season?
Yeah, I think midweek is an issue. I mean, obviously, getting people off work, getting away, you know, often, let's say 3 o'clock to try and get to a 7:45 kickoff is difficult. Certainly is, and certainly. When we have played midweek, we haven't had our strongest side out, and that's when you tend to drop points, you know. So it is a problem, but we've got a fair-sized squad, and, you know, we try to overcome that. But definitely, it is an issue getting away in time and, you know, getting there for 7:45 kick-off with the appropriate warm-up time before the game is difficult.
And you mentioned those costs for the travel, but moving up that, to that next level as well. Have there been additional sort of playing and other, you know, sort of coaching costs as well on the playing side of things this year?
Yeah, there is. Obviously, you know, we've strengthened the squad from last year. We did well. We finished second in Northern League, which is, you know, a tough league. But we've had to strengthen the the management side with, you know, an extra couple of coaches, one a goalkeeping coach to help the manager. Clearly, the squad has been strengthened and two or three new defenders in. And for the first part of the season, our goals against ratio is very good. And that's made a big difference to us. So there has been extra costs, which to compete week in, week out in a tough league where everyone tends to give everyone a game, it's you need a strong squad.
Swampy.
Yeah, Ken, well, first of all, congratulations of getting promoted. I know we spoke to you last season, and you were wary of that travelling. What if you've got a couple of questions, really? I mean, the first one is, I mean, obviously being based in the northeast of England, knowing all the local teams that you played against in the Northern Division and a good division it is, do you miss any of the local games and that local rivalry and the derby atmosphere that it creates? Because I know the nearest club really to you in the division, a mask, aren't they, in Cleveland? I mean, that's a 140-mile round trip, over three hours' journey. So do you miss that side of things, or is the football a slightly higher level now and that's what you're concentrating on? Or do you miss that rivalry, local rivalry and the local games?
There is an element of that, but I think overall, it's first of all, that's your question. It is investing to go to new ground, certainly. We've been in the Northern League since, we were in the Northern League since, I think, 92. You do stay a little bit going to the same grounds every season. And saying that, there's a lot of camaraderie in the Northern League. We do miss sort of the camaraderie with people we know. However, the benefit is seeing new grounds and having the benefit of playing against sides where every one of the sides you play can compete. You know, the Northern League is one or two sides at the bottom, which you'd always know the result. But in this league, I say the difference is every game can be difficult. You have to be up for the challenge. And I would say it's slightly more physical overall. I think we prepare well for that, and that's shown in the results we've had this season.
You've got Mask, haven't you, at Town on Boxing Day, and then New Year's Day, it's Tadcaster for you, which again, you know, is going to be a tough encounter. But you know, the way you are in this division at the moment, I mean, you join. We know the quarter of the Northern Division, and we've seen the teams. Is the ambition for this season to do a Spennymoor, a Blyth, or a South Shields is take the name of Morpeth and get promoted again and get into the Northern Premier Division?
Certainly. I mean, you know, we're promoted. I was, as you said earlier, I was a little bit sceptical, but particularly with travel. But having been promoted, we've got to go for it again, and we're gearing up to that, you know. We want to go into the next league now. I think we should be lucky enough to win this league. And the aim is to try to get the ground up to scratch. You know, we're trying to get the ground so it's the best in the division. We're working hard to do that on the pitch as well as the terracing, etc. So it's all about standards for me. And clearly, we're trying to create a community club here whereby it's an experience to come to the game. And so it's a case of the, I call us the helpers, if you like, the volunteers who can make it happen, you know, and work hard and try and obviously make an experience for supporters.
You mentioned earlier on. You mentioned 25,000 additional costs in travel this season. It's nice that you're also using public transport, i.e., you're using the train, which can get you to a number of games, which is always a good thing, really, certainly for players. But how has the club? I mean, you're saying, you know, you're having to work hard as a committee, but you're having to create a revenue which is probably maybe two or three times bigger just because of travelling costs than other football clubs. So what advice have you got to other clubs in order to be able to try and market themselves, try and raise those kind of funds? I mean, because every club can't do it. What's unique about Morpeth, or, what can other clubs do to replicate the way you do things?
Well, what we've done, first of all, was try to create a family atmosphere and get the youngsters to come along who are part of the junior setup, and get their parents to come. That was the first thing. And then, advertise in the town, get leaflets from the various pubs, try and make it so it's the, you know, it's a feeling of the town behind the club. The next thing we're looking at is try to create the facilities here and the clubhouse where we can have functions, and we're working hard to have functions, and we've only been able to do that by getting the facilities right. We've spent a lot of money on the kitchens, or the kitchen we have, and the toilets, the clubhouse itself, new carpets, etc. So we're getting more functions in, and that's where we think we can keep the momentum going and earn more revenue. It's all about working hard, really. It's about working hard, getting the town behind us, making an experience so people want to come back and they come to a match. So basically hard work and working with the community.
And do you think the likes of, you know, the likes of Spennymoor and Blyth and South Shields, does that push you on even more so because you see the success that those teams are having at this moment in time, you know, doing well? Does it really give you that impetus to sort of like want to follow in their footsteps?
It does. You know, obviously, from my angle, it pushes me on because the clubs that you mentioned, you know, are well organised off the field, and that's the key. You've got to be well organised. You've got to be better off the field than as you are on it. So it's a case of having the right momentum to make money and to invest it back in the club. That's the only way you'll succeed, by being well organised off the field and creating the situation where people want to come to a game. That's the only way you can progress, in my view. And the teams you mentioned there get good crowds, and certainly we're improving. You know, we used to get crowds of, say, 150, 200. We're now getting crowds of 400 to 500. So it has been good for us coming up, and it's, you know, it's been a new challenge, and the community's responded really. But it's all about getting it right off the field.
You mentioned it's a new challenge, and you say that the crowds have gone up. Are you enjoying it, Ken? Is it as much fun being chairman at this level as it was in Step 5, where you had all your friends and all those guys that you'd known for years around you?
It can be quite daunting at times because, you know, there's cost to be met. Sometimes, obviously, as chairman, I've got to put my hand in my own pocket. But I do enjoy it. But as I say, it can be quite daunting at times, but that's part of the challenge, you know, that we're in. You know, I've been a player at Mortlake Town before. I was player for, as player and committee guy for 20 seasons, and then came on to, as chairman. So it's a task I've been gifted with, if you like, for want of a better word. And it's up to me now to create a situation where the club is self-sufficient. We've got a good, strong committee. We're all working towards the same goal. But it can be daunting, but everyone gets that way. It's part of the challenge.
Well, it's been great talking to you again, Ken. It's nice to see that the project's moving forward and, you know, everything's rolling in the right direction. And hopefully we'll speak to you before the end of the season with some more success. But we wish you well over the Christmas period, and we'll speak to you in 2019.
Well, thanks very much indeed. All the best.
Swampy, now, we did speak to Ken last year, and he was quite fearful of and quite vociferous as well about, you know, having to take that promotion and what it would mean to his club. And, well, as he said, I think he said they'd an extra 25,000 just for this level, and they're looking to go up again. And that's the problem. When you're trying to make a football club sustainable, you also want to make it successful as well. And it's a double-edged sword.
It certainly can be, yeah. And as you say, I think the one thing that they were the first club that were actually told that you automatic promotion is not an option. You will take it or you will be relegated to another division. And I think the fact that that's happened now, every club in the Northern League knows that situation. They're going to become, I think, you'll see not necessarily a dominance, but you'll see plenty of North East clubs coming in to the division from a Northern Premier perspective. Money-wise, it means that there's going to have to... I mean, they love the bingo in the North East, but they're going to have to have a lot of bingo nights in order to be able to, you know, 25,000. I mean, I know Darlington, you know, a bit further down the country, they were sponsored by Virgin Rail. So whether or not clubs can get link-ups with transport organisations... I mean, if you're spending 25 grand on transport, in 5 years' time, you've bought the bus. You know, that's the thing. You know, I mean, there is big issues in regards to travel. But as you say, if you want to be part and parcel of, you know, an improving and a quality division, sometimes you have to make that step. It's working at this moment in time. They've played 18, they've won 12, They've only lost three all season. They scored 44 goals, 39 points. They've got a break this weekend, I think. I don't think they're playing this Saturday.
They have, so yeah, they, a club with a Saturday free before Christmas.
Yeah, which is you know, and again, I mean, FC United last week, we didn't have a game. We couldn't play a league game. We try to get a friendly because obviously revenue is massively important as much to FC United as it is to any club. So therefore, we got a friendly in place, and so there was revenue going through the turnstile because FC United hadn't had a game. I think at home we hadn't had a game for 3 weeks. So you know when that home revenue doesn't come in. So I'm sure Ken this weekend will probably have something in line. You know, maybe a record, book a record bingo afternoon in the ground. But money, you know, this is where we talk about distribution of money within the footballing pyramid. And you know, some clubs can do that. There will be clubs, I'm sure, in the Northern League that'll get to a stage where they look like they're going to win the league, and they'll slowly but surely not finish top. Because, you know, there's not a huge amount of money. It's finite resources and people can only put their hands in their pocket so much. So, again, a rethink, perhaps. Maybe the FA are feeling they've got a lot of Christmas cheer and spirit about them. They might want to get the FA and the Premier League to redistribute some wealth amongst the us mere mortals in semi-professional football, eh?
So time of the week to head on over to the non-league paper, and a welcome back to the show to editor of the NLP, Mr. Alex Neary. Good evening, Alex.
Good evening, Tim.
Well, Christmas is coming, and it's always a busy time for non-league. So let's start off with the big managerial appointment we were all waiting for, but it didn't come. Wrexham.
Yeah. I came on the show a couple of weeks ago and fought the case for John Askew. I really thought John was made for that job. I felt that he would have fitted them like a glove. It didn't happen. I suppose the writing was probably on the wall a little bit a couple of weeks ago when Wrexham announced that Graham Barrow had signed a contract at the club to remain in a coaching/assistant capacity. And I suppose once they've done that, they'd made their bed with respect to whoever came in would have had to fit it into the way the club wanted to run things. So I guess if somebody like a John Askew had come in, or a more experienced manager in that mould, then they probably would have wanted to bring in their own backroom team, which is understandable and fairly logical. So by giving Barrow that contract and making him part of the permanent staff there, it kind of they made their bed. So it was I suppose we should have seen this one coming. I am still a bit surprised by it, but I don't think the fans are. I think the fans are quite pleased, actually. I think the fans are quite pleased that they've got somebody who could be a settled name there. They've lost two young managers in the space of 9 months. They're probably quite relieved that they're not putting another young guy out there that's going to make a name for himself very quickly, and the Football League club will come along and snap him up. So, it's not the appointment that I would have put money on, certainly before he signed that contract a couple of weeks ago, but it does make some sense, and good luck to Wrexham. I really do wish him all the best.
Yeah, maybe it is that stability that they're striving for, and just to... I mean, the year they've been in non-league, they've tried pretty much every option of manager, haven't they? So with things working well with Graham, it as you say, it maybe is the sensible way forward. And Mike Newell coming in as his assistant.
Yeah, absolutely. Another former Premier League player who's coming in there. Got great experience in the game. A no-nonsense guy as well, I have to say. I interviewed him when I was a much younger man back in my earlier journalism days, and he was he did not suffer fools. So he'll be certainly the guy to alongside Barrow, almost in a kind of enforcer role, and I use that description lightly. It looks like it's a good combination. It looks like it's been well thought out, and they've taken the time, Wrexham. They didn't jump in there with two feet and try and get somebody in there straight away. when Sam Ricketts left. So, yeah, two good guys, two different characters that will complement each other, I'm sure, very nicely. And like I say, it's a really, really great job that to take on, that Wrexham job. It's incredible to think that they have been, from the National League, if you look at the National League as it is now, they've been in that Wrexham have been in the National League longer than any other club. I find that quite astonishing, that a club of that size and with that fan base and has been down in the National League for that amount of time. So great opportunity. They're in a great position in the league and all set for a strong second half of the season. So, yeah, good luck to them.
They've been in the National League so long that even Hazen Yedding played them when we were in the National League. That was a long time ago. Other news I've seen this week, I saw the National League with a attendance analysis recently, and they were you know, celebrating that they've got three over, averaging over 4,000 home gates, four over 3,000 home gates, six over 2,000 average home gates, and 12, so the top half of the division in the National League, averaging over 1,500 for a home gate. But then the rest of them are, you know, there's plenty below 1,000. And it's whether those figures are skewing attendances. Are more people attending games or are attendances slightly down?
Well, the National League is, it's like a glorified fourth division tribute act. It really is. The teams you've got down there, we've just talked about Wrexham, Leyton Orient, Hartlepool, Chesterfield. All the trouble they've been having on and off the pitch this season, and the football that the fans have been served up. And I say that with great respect to Martin Allen. I don't mean that in a derogatory manner, but they're not where they need to be, and they're not where they should be. But they're still clocking in gates of over 5,000, which is phenomenal. But these are former Football League teams who are just trying to turn the vessel around and get back to where they came from. So, yeah, the attendances might be a little bit misleading in the respect that there are some big numbers there and then there are some low numbers there as well. But that's the nature of the National League. You've got clubs coming down from the Football League with huge fan bases, and you've got clubs coming up that have made their way up from Step 3 up to Step 2, and now they're in Step 1. And they just don't have that huge following. But it's the nature of non-league football, I guess. I think it's fantastic that we've got these clubs down there, and I'm sure the likes of Leyton Orient wouldn't think it's fantastic that they're in the National League when they want to get back to the Football League. But we've got these great grounds, and we've got these great followings. Actually, the National North, the attendances in the National North are very, very impressive as well. You've got the likes of Stockport there and FC United. It's a bit of a northwest hotbed, and Hereford are there as well now. So there's some seriously big attendances in the National North. So they might be a little bit skewed, the overall attendance average, in respect that some clubs are not pulling in the numbers, but a lot of clubs are pulling in the big numbers. But I think that's just the nature of non-league football. It really is.
Yeah, and I think it's got to be a benefit to the whole of non-league, that it creates a bigger spotlight on what we're doing.
Absolutely. It's exactly it. And it creates a spotlight. And I think the fans of the clubs, that i.e. those big clubs like the Wrexhams, that when they go to maybe a Solihull Moors or a Havant and Waterlooville or a Maidenhead, it's a bit of a shock to the system. It's a home, you know, when they play each other, it's business as usual. You know, gates of 5,000-6,000. I think I'm pretty sure the Leyton Orient Hartlepool game and the Leyton Orient Wrexham game, both those attendances clocked over 7,000. That's phenomenal. Mm. But there are going to be those days where they have to travel to, like I say, Solihull Moors or Sutton United or Boreham Wood, and you're looking at attendances of just under or just over 1,000. But like I say, that's the nature of non-league football, and we're never going to get huge fan bases across the board. We just aren't. But we should celebrate the fact that these clubs are in non-league football, and I just think it's great for the game. It's good that it puts the spotlight on us, like you say, and it's, you know, long may it continue. Right? There'll be another two clubs next year who come down, I'm sure, and bring huge fan bases with them. And we, as we say goodbye to two clubs that go up, so it's just the way it is, really.
Well, talking about celebrating fan bases, what about Dulwich on Boxing Day? How big is that going to be?
Oh, absolutely huge! Really, I mean, it's the way the fixture calendar has fallen for the NLP this year. We will obviously be covering Boxing Day games, but because in theory we're going Sunday to Sunday, it hasn't really affected what we're doing. So we're obviously on sale this Sunday, and then we're on sale the following Sunday. But we'll be reviewing the Boxing Day program because it's such an important and iconic day in the football calendar. But this one, this Boxing Day, is very, very special. After all the trouble and what Dulwich Hamlet went through last season, having to ground share, being kicked out of their ground, being told that they couldn't use the logo and the name, and it started to get very, very messy. Obviously, with the ground developers, Meadow, it looked like it was going to get really ugly at one point. Thankfully, they're moving back to Champion Hill, and they're making their grand entrance back to their old stomping ground on Boxing Day. So the non-league paper, despite that being not a game that we'll be covering the next day, because there isn't a paper the next day, but we will be covering it. We'll be there. We'll have a special review, and we'll be looking back on what will be a very, very special day in next week's issue. So it's fantastic. We're absolutely made up for everyone at Dulwich. It's been a right old slog for them in the last 12 months. But they're back. They're back where they belong, and we're really chuffed for them.
And before I let you go, we had Nathan Munson on earlier talking about Needham Market and their aborted game down at Weymouth in the Trophy. What were your thoughts on that? And, I mean, how can the authorities sort of stop that sort of thing happening?
Well, it's a tough one. My thoughts on it are, and this is the festive season, and people probably think I'm being a bit of a Scrooge here, but I understand and I have sympathy for Needham Market. I really do. I understand the logic in their argument. Of course I do, but I'm afraid I'm coming down on the side of the FA here, because this is senior football now, and this is a senior cup competition, and when you get to the first round of the FA Trophy, I think you're talking five or six games away from playing at Wembley, and clubs know the rules. The rules are clearly set out for them, and if they don't know the rules, it's because they haven't paid attention to them. I'm not for a second saying Needham Market haven't paid attention to the rules, but the rules are the rules, and if you start manoeuvring things and bending the rules for one club, it just creates a trickle effect. And before you know it, every club will be pointing to a loophole that they can exploit. So my initial thoughts are, I have sympathy for the club, but I do have to, you know, back up the FA here for sticking to the rules. It's never nice. They're always in a difficult situation when circumstances like this. I guess what people are asking now is, how can we avoid a similar situation in the future? Well, the trophy is still regionalised at this stage. So I think Needham Market have just become incredibly unlucky with who they've drawn. they've drawn a club that's miles away from them. They then got unlucky with the bad weather at the weekend, and the replay or the rescheduled game was scheduled for a Tuesday night. But this is nothing new. I can remember, I'm a Middlesbrough fan, and I can remember, not that I was born when this took place, but I was speaking to Brian Lee about it, you know, and when he was the Wickham manager. And
that sounds like a true Middlesbrough fan, that I was born, that I can remember something that happened with Middlesbrough. But
no, but this did happen, I think it was 1973, so it's a couple of years before I came onto the planet. But Brian was telling me the story a couple of years ago. Wickham made it through to the third or the fourth round of the FA Cup. I'm probably not being too accurate there, but they drew Middlesbrough and they took it to a replay on a Tuesday night, and Brian had to rustle together a team to take to Teesside on a Tuesday night. And all his players worked, and they all had other full-time careers, but he managed to do it. Now, that's probably a slightly different example to use from what we're talking about here. A, it was probably a bigger cup competition and it was a bigger game, but the rules are set out, and it's just quite unfortunate that this has happened. The solutions, listen, my solution will be different to somebody else's solution. I think the first round of the FA Trophy should be played a couple of weeks earlier, because we're right into the Christmas congestion period now. So by bringing it forward a couple of weeks, maybe starting the trophy a little bit earlier in the summer or at the start of the season, that might alleviate a few problems. But you start moving fixtures around and saying, well, if that happens, then what we can do is we can move it to a Sunday, or we can the game that they're next due to play in the league, if we can, that team has to give up that game. And there's no easy solution. I wish I could sit here now and say there's an easy solution and give you one, but I can't. But I just think that, looking at what's happened this week, I've got a lot of sympathy for Needham Market. I really have. But at the end of the day, it's a senior cup competition, and they knew the rules before they got to the first round. So I do have sympathy for them, but I've got to give my back into the FA for the way they've stood firm.
You mentioned the Christmas fixture congestion. That must mean plenty to read in the newspaper. Well, this weekend and the weekend following Christmas, ahead of the New Year's Day games.
Yeah, exactly. And as I mentioned earlier, the Sundays have fallen relatively nicely for us, in the sense that we can cover them both, and it's pretty much a full program. It's obviously a full program this Saturday, and the following Saturday on the 29th, I think there are a few leagues that haven't quite got full programs, but pretty much it's full on. So yeah, it'll be great. But it's all about who's going to be Christmas number one. Our annual front page for this Sunday of the year, and I think when I say Christmas number one, I'm talking about the National League. I think there are three clubs, Leighton Orient, Salford and Harrogate, who can all get that mantle. So the headline, the front page, is pretty much written itself, and it's all ready and waiting for who can take advantage of Saturday's games. But, you know, we're really looking forward to it. We've had a great year. We've had a really good calendar year. We've seen some great football. Second half of last season, Macclesfield, which is superb, and Tranmere going up, and all the other respective league winners below, from steps two down to steps four, and the FA Vars, the FA Trophy, Brackley and Thatcham Town. It was a great, great second half of the year, and this first half of the season has been just as good. So, yeah, great 2018, and we wish all our readers a very Merry Christmas and all the best for 2019 too.
And I saw the great man's list, and apparently you're on the nice list. So it looks like it's going to be even better 2018 for you.
Yeah, well, we hope so. Yeah, that's very nice. So like I say, we've had a great year. We've enjoyed it, and long may it continue. But before I go, just a really special mention to Dulwich Hamlet going back to Champion Hill on Sunday. That is, for me and for all the guys at the non-league paper, it's the feel-good story of the season so far. We didn't think January, February, March this year, we didn't think this was going to be happening. And it's just a really, really good feel-good story for non-league football, but wider football. Of course, a lot of people are involved in this, and the wider community of football has come together and has thrown their support behind Dulwich. So we're made up for them, and we just hope everything runs smoothly for them on Boxing Day, and we wish them all the best in 2019.
We do indeed, and we wish you best, and everybody at the paper as well, a very happy Christmas, and we'll speak to you before the New Year's out.
Great stuff. Look forward to it. Cheers, Tim.
Time's got the better of us again, Swampy. A big thank you for your contribution and joining us again this week.
Very welcome. I always enjoy the show, and I, you know what I even do, Tim? I even listen to it on a Friday.
Well, so do I. So do I. Some people would doubt that. But as usual as well, a thank you to all of our guests and a big thank you to everybody that listens, including Swampy and his family, hopefully, as well. And don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season. Join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Tell your friends, too. They can find us every week on Audio Boom, iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, and all good podcast aggregation sites. We wish you a very fantastic Christmas, one and all. Thank you and goodbye.
J-I-B-B-A-J-A-B-B-A.